got a sprain or an itch. Pain that's swelling or twitch. Call up and ask me. Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me. Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Yo.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
Well, let's not talk about sex. Let's talk about money, economics, and health care. Going back to the 1960s and adjusting for inflation, while median income has only risen by about 18%, the cost of median rent has risen about 64%. Looking at an apartment, for example, in New York in the early 1960s, then rent was somewhere around $125 for a two-bedroom apartment. Now that same apartment goes for $2,000 to $3,000 a month.
Healthcare is often out of the reach of many of the citizens here in the United States. In 2016, the percentage of people without health insurance coverage for the entire calendar year was 9%, or 28 million, while the percentage of people with health insurance was around 90%.
Of this, private health insurance covered two-thirds of the citizens, while government insurance covered the remaining third.
Breaking it down even further, employer-based insurance coverage just over one-half, while Medicaid covered about 20% and Medicare 17%.
Private or direct purchase insurance covered a similar number, around 16%. And military, well, that coverage was just 5% or so. But even then, many who have insurance coverage had difficulty getting that health simply because they could not pay the deductibles or the co-pays for many of the medical services, such as doctor's visits, hospital visits, ER visits, diagnostic tests and treatments, including medicines.
What is the average yearly deductible for those with insurance? Well, it largely depends on your plan. For example, typically you can find bronze plans with a deductible in the range of $3,000 to $6,350, silver in the range of $3,000 to $5,000, gold in the range of $500 to $2,000, and platinum in the range of $0 to $1,500.
So to really understand healthcare costs for most individuals, you need to understand things such as premiums, co-pays, and co-insurance, apart from just the deductibles. Health insurance costs continue to soar in the United States, far surpassing the overall inflation rate. Most Americans younger than 65 rely on employer-subsidized policies to cover medical costs, even as the costs of those policies jump year after year.
We all know that access to medical insurance is a hot-button political issue. Since 2014, the Federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, ACA, has required everyone to carry insurance, but the so-called mandate is rolled back with the elimination of tax penalties for not having a policy.
Those who can't get coverage at work are able to buy insurance through federally subsidized insurance exchanges that are part of the ACA, also known as Obamacare. But even though the Congressional Budget Office estimates that the government will pay $685 billion in ACA subsidies in 2018, with around 29 million people, continue still to go uninsured. So let's start with the premiums. In other words, the monthly payments to keep the insurance. The premiums for subsidized Obama policies averaged $393 a month in 2017 for individuals. That's a 99% increase since 2013. That's pretty hard to believe.
And they came with an average annual deductible of $4,328. The cost of family policies skyrocketed 140% during the same period, with premiums hitting $1,021 a month in 2018, with an annual deductible topping $8,350.
And many employer-sponsored plans offer less expensive coverage. They're the mainstay of non-elderly health insurance in the United States, covering more than half the population under 65, but even this is growing more costly. So let's continue to talk numbers. the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation reported that the average annual premium for employer-sponsored health insurance for a single worker was $6,690 in 2017 and $18,786 for family coverage.
Still, workers only pay a portion of their premium in most cases, though the percentage they pay and the cost of their policies vary widely.
Well, let's start with health insurance premiums. As we said, a health insurance premium is simply the monthly payments made to an insurance company to buy a policy. Premiums are the primary source of revenue for the insurance providers, your insurance companies.
To make a profit, insurance companies must take in more money in premium payments than they pay out in benefits. That's a simple mathematical formula. Profit equals income minus expenses. The more the insurance companies take in and the less they pay out is called profit.
Unlike copays and deductibles, premiums must be paid whether an insured person has medical expenses or not. Now, for most American families, health care premiums are the greatest health care cost. Premiums for family coverage through employer-sponsored plans rose 55% between 2007 and 2017, just 10 years, according to that Kaiser Family Foundation study. Employers generally pay a substantial amount of the workers' premiums, but most workers contribute to premium costs. The employer portion of workers' health care premiums are exempt from federal and state income taxes, and the employee portion usually is deducted before withholding and excluded from taxable income.
Lower-wage workers generally pay a greater percentage of their health insurance premiums. Those employed and small firms pay 39% of the premium for family coverage compared to 28% for workers at large companies.
Now, that's a hefty amount, ranging between a little less than one-third to around 40%. In 2017, the average family premium for employer-sponsored insurance, that's ESI coverage, was $17,581. Although employers cover most of the costs, what we're interested here is the amount the employees pay out of their salaries, and that ends up being about 31% of the cost.
So, the average worker contributed just under $6,000 a year to the family premium.
$6,000 a year, and we've yet to get to the costs per year for the deductibles, copays, and coinsurance.
Let's start with the deductible again. Remember that the deductible is the amount of medical costs that you must pay before insurance coverage even begins.
The deductibles renew annually, so each year policyholders face a fresh deductible even if they paid the full deductible in the previous year. For example, an individual with a $1,500 deductible will have to pay for the first $1,500 of care he or she receives each year.
A health insurance policy with a high deductible will usually come with a lower monthly premium. A policy with a low deductible will have a higher premium.
And sometimes it can get really confusing, as some plans may have separate deductibles for specific services. And under some policies, certain services, for example, like a trip to an emergency room or a routine doctor visit, may not require a deductible payment at all.
There are some medical expenses that do not have deductibles. These include hospital stays, lab tests, CAT scans and MRIs, surgeries, medical devices, and doctor costs that exceed copays.
So now let's get to the copay. A copay is simply a fixed charge paid by an insured individual when visiting a doctor, seeing a specialist, visiting an urgent care or the emergency room, or in many cases, purchasing a prescription drug. It varies by policy, of course, and copays can increase dramatically for those with HMO and PPO policies if they receive treatment from medical practices outside their policy's provider networks. Now, when I was younger, and even when I was just starting in medical practice, most health insurance plans allowed policyholders to freely pick their doctors, the hospitals, and the clinics.
But costs began rising, and far be it for the insurance companies to lose profits, so they started looking for ways to trim expenses.
They cut deals with doctors, physician groups, hospitals, and myriad other healthcare providers that offered lower rates, allowing the insurers to pass the savings to their policyholders.
So, insurance companies used copays and another alternative, coinsurance, to split costs with you, their policyholders.
The copay system might save money, but it has added to the complexity of healthcare. So policyholders typically must consider two sets of fees. those set for providers in their approved network, and those outside the networks. Generally, fees are much lower if you see only the approved providers.
But copays are complicated, unlike deductibles. Copays are fees imposed each time you visit a medical provider.
And the fees vary. You pay one fee to visit a family practice doctor, another to see a specialist, and another to go to an emergency room or clinic.
So even though many of these costs do not have deductibles, copays are charged for tests, prescription drugs, physical therapy, and other covered expenses.
If these costs will go on forever, then most people would not deem keeping medical insurance cost-effective or even possible. So to limit what patients have to pay, and therefore keep customers, most policies have annual and lifetime caps on out-of-pocket payments. Depending on the policy, these caps can be quite high.
Knowing how your plan works is critical. Some insurance companies treat deductibles and copays as separate entities, while others connect them.
For example, one policy might apply your copays to fulfilling your annual deductible, but another might not. Under some plans, copays contribute to the policy's deductible. In others, the deductible must be met before a copay applies at all. If your plan charges copays, they will be listed on your insurance card.
Right now, copays are shrinking as a portion of what insured people pay for care. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, rising deductibles are the biggest culprit in out-of-pocket healthcare spending for employer-sponsored plans.
Deductibles arose from an average of $303 a year in 2006 to $1,200 a year in 2016. Enrollee spending on deductibles rose from $151 to $417 during that same period. That's a 176% increase. But the amount spent on copays actually fell 38% from $225 to $140 in 2016.
A typical copay for a routine visit to a doctor's office in network ranges from $5 to $25. For a specialty, $0 to $50. For urgent care, $75 to $100. And for treatment in an emergency room, $200 to $300. Copays for prescription drugs depend on the medication and whether it is brand name drug or a generic version.
Well, it's time for our mid-show break. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky with Carmen Lasky, and this is Hey Doc. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Getting back to healthcare costs and insurance, coinsurance is another way in which healthcare costs are shared between a health insurance company and the patient.
In other words, this is another way that the insurance companies stick you with additional share of costs.
Plans that require insurance payments generally have them kick in after the yearly deductible has been met, after which the insurance company pays a percentage of all costs, 75, 80, or 90%, while the insured party covers the rest.
And coinsurance rates may vary based on the type of service and whether they are provided in or out of network.
Now, we've yet to define coinsurance and compare it to copays. Coinsurance is a percentage of the cost of a medical service that you are obligated to pay. Copays are fixed amounts that you pay each time you access a particular medical service. So let's take some examples. Copays may be paid each time you visit a doctor or fill a prescription. And copays may or may not count toward fulfillment of your annual deductible. They are paid when you see the physician or buy a prescription.
On the other hand, coinsurance is an amount you pay for medical services or drug after you made your deductible, and it is usually a percentage of the cost of the service or prescription.
Therefore, the healthcare provider bills you directly. All of this can be taxing on your shrinking income. We often think of income as the dollar amount that we get for working. but I like to think of it as the hours spent working to obtain those things, such as health care, rent, mortgage, or other necessities, as well as luxuries that we all pay for.
Let us say you make $50,000 a year for your full-time 40-hour-a-week job. Calculate your monthly income after taxes.
That's important because we want to know how much money you have left to pay all of those things that we just mentioned.
At a $50,000 a year salary, that is $3,500 more or less a month.
Since most average around 40 hours a week, we could say that the actual take-home hourly income is a little less than $22. And for many, quite a bit less than that.
So there is the money coming in. Now let's calculate the money going out, the expenses.
Now let's add up all the work-related expenses you have. Now this includes the obvious things like office attire, commuting costs, work lunches, and dry cleaning, but also the less obvious costs that come from being tied up at work all day, daycare, house cleaning, and the self-care activities that help you, well, let's just say de-stress after work.
After that, all the hours you spend on work when you are not at work, commute time, write it down, answering emails after hours, that too.
Even the time you need to unwind when you get home counts. After all, if you weren't working, you wouldn't need to unwind.
Finally, let's crunch the numbers. Subtract your monthly work-related expenses from your monthly wages and add your non-work work hours to your actual work hours.
Then divide your real wages by your real work hours. So let's say, remember here, you are the hypothetical $50,000 a year worker and you spend $1,500 a month on work-related expenses and 40 hours of work-related time outside of work. That makes your real hourly wage $10. Doesn't sound so good anymore, does it?
So just looking at the health expenses that we calculated before, which had to come out of the excess money that you make, that being the $10 per hour worked, you actually need to spend half your work time paying for your medical expenses.
Don't think of the amount of money you spend. Rather think of the expense as the time you need to work to make that money to pay the medical expenses, and not just medical expenses. With a rent or mortgage monthly payment, you're probably spending at least 1.5 weeks or even 2 paying just for this.
That means that you are working 80 hours or so a month just to pay for your place to live.
No wonder you have so little left. Has it always been like this? Well, Carmen and I went on a research expedition on the internet, and we discovered something very interesting. What we did was built a graph in Microsoft Excel that showed the increase in average family income and average family expenses since 1930.
Some of the facts were really interesting. For example, while wages did increase over 2,000% since 1930, from just 1970 to $44,000 in 2012, the cost of housing rose 8,000%.
Whereas a home in 1930 cost, now hold your hats, $3,800. A house in 2013 cost upwards of $290,000. Hamburgers that cost 12 cents, again in 1930, now cost over $4. Gasoline has gone up from 12 cents to $3.80. But cars and bread, well, they have increased, but just about the level with wages.
The point is, you now must work longer to get the same things that you would have had to buy in 1930s. This is just one reason why there are so many two-worker families now as compared to the 1930s.
If your real hourly wage is $10, that means that every $10 you spend is an hour of life energy. That is, it's one more hour you have to work at the end of your career to achieve financial independence. A $40 food delivery when you have groceries in the fridge? 4 hours. A $100 new clothes haul when everything in your closet still fits? 10 hours off your golden years. A $15 Uber ride when the bus is 10 minutes away? Well, that's 90 minutes you'll never get back. Did you ever watch a YouTube clip or just an animated video, especially a slow motion view of a person walking across the screen? Did you notice that about 50% of the time, one or the other foot is not resting on the ground?
In other words, since walking can be considered a series of forward falling from one foot to another, half the time all of our weight is on one leg or the other.
For today's show, we'd like to talk about a specific part of that leg. Halfway down the leg, there's the knee. That's the joint that bends forward and back with each step. Now watch a football receiver as he runs down the field, trying to avert tackles. Watch his knees as they flex, not just in that forward and back motion, but to some degree side to side and twist at the same time.
Now, taking a 160-pound individual who is walking, he or she takes around 2,000 steps every mile walked, just about 1,000 knee bends for each knee for each mile walked.
Many of you have pedometers, that is, wristbands and ankle devices and even smartphones that count the number of steps and miles we walk each day. And many of you are often surprised how much we walk daily as we add up the walking in our homes, at play, and at work. And the knees must sustain this throughout our lives.
Problems arise when there is undue stress, injuries, or other medical diseases that affects the joints, especially in the case of today's show, the knees.
The knee joint itself is made up of bones, cartilage, ligaments, tendons, muscles, nerves, and blood vessels. We're just going to concentrate on the bones today and leave the rest for next week's show, as each joint could literally be a show in itself.
The largest bone in the knee is the femur, thus the big bone in your thigh.
At the lower end of the femur, where it enters the knee, it widens out into two rounded bulbs that really make up the superior part of the knee that rotates in conjunction with the second largest bone in the knee called the tibia. There's also the fibula on the outside of the tibia, as well as the patella. That's better known as the kneecap.
If that was all we had in the joint, those 1,000 steps each mile would place such wear and tear on the knee that we would not have them for very long. So the end of the femur and tibia have a covering called the articular cartilage.
It is generally smooth and white and acts to protect the joints as it moves around. There's also another thicker cartilage that is present above the tibia, and these are called the menisci, or meniscus for short here. This acts like a rubber washer, allowing for some protection and limitation, preventing the femur from slipping out of the indentations in the tibia that hold the femur generally in place.
But more is needed to keep the bones in general proximity. Remember that with each step, we are placing all of our weight onto each knee. If you weigh 160 pounds, then all 160 pounds are banging the bones closer to each other.
So, the first defense we have that prevents the bones from slipping apart are ligaments. There are two ligaments called collateral ligaments, one on each side of the joint, preventing the knee from slipping sideways, and a crossed pair of shorter ligaments called cruciate ligaments in the center of the joint, preventing them from moving too far forward or backward, or even twisting too much.
In order for the knee to move, we, of course, need muscles. When muscles contract and move the joints, a muscle in the back of the knee, when contracted, causes the knee to bend, while another in the front causes the knee to extend.
As one muscle tightens, the other usually relaxes, as the muscles work together to produce movement of the joint.
You can imagine how many problems that can occur when these processes go astray.
For example, many of us who follow Jacksonville Jaguars noted that our quarterback, Minshew, was wearing a knee brace after some sort of knee injury that he sustained in the last Jaguars game.
And just like in football, we will have to wait another week to see just what the damage is that a knee can sustain right here on the Hey Doc Show.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.